right. I'm very excited today to be here with Sarah Torres. Sarah, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. It's so good to see you. You know, I said earlier when we were catching up that it's been too long, but it's actually not really been that long at all. What were you, a 2016 graduate? 15?
15.
Yeah.
So a number of years ago, not too long, but it's weird to think I've been out of school longer than I was in school.
yes, for sure. You know, and I love talking to former students who are in their early career, but have done some amazing things in their early career. And I always say I'd love to have you back sometime when you're like the CEO. But we'll catch you here on the front side, and then maybe again in 10, 15 years. How's that?
That sounds great. I'll plan for it.
Awesome. You do that for sure. So Sarah is an experience and design strategist for The Hive at Adobe. Is that right?
That is correct.
Absolutely. And I'm super excited to talk to you all about that and what you're doing there at Adobe and your experience in moving through Adobe. But let's go back in time a little bit. Tell us where you're from.
So I am from the small town of Simi Valley. It is North LA, just east of Thousand Oaks. More people are a little bit more familiar with Thousand Oaks than Simi Valley. So I grew up there, and I was there since I was four. So that really is my hometown. My parents are still there. Simi Valley.
Awesome. So SoCal girl goes to NorCal, huh?
Yeah, it's funny. I tell people I started in SoCal and then Cal Poly is like center.
Yeah.
And then I just keep moving up. So when I move next, I have to move to like Seattle or something.
That's right. Seattle and Vancouver. Next thing you know, you're in Anchorage, Alaska. I love it. That's cool. What did your parents do when you were growing up?
So my dad is an aerospace / mechanical engineer.
Oh, wow. Is that where the Cal Poly connection comes from or not?
No, but he really loved Cal Poly because he's like, oh, the engineering school is great. We only hire kids from Cal Poly. You have to go there.
Right.
My dad was familiar with the engineering school for sure.
Okay.
And then my mom worked within like a real estate office doing like admin work and things like that. So
okay.
That is what they do.
Awesome. Were you an only child or did you have siblings?
I have an older sister. She's about 3 years older than me. She went to UCSB actually.
Oh yeah. And Gaucho.
But right now she is currently living in Orange County area, and she is a graphic design / in the marketing field for a finance company.
Oh, okay. All right. Very cool.
So just us four.
Nice. So what were you like growing up, Sarah? Were you into sports, the arts, design? What were you? Were you a drama kid? Would you get in the band? What'd you do?
Yeah, so I had two like major sport identities, I would say, when I was growing up.
Oh yeah.
My first was I was actually a hardcore gymnast, like hardcore. Like I was in the gym 16 to 20 hours a week. I was competing. So competitive gymnast. It was fun. It was like serious business though, and I was only
I think I was like the
second half of elementary and middle school, I did that. And then it got to a point where it was, you either need to be homeschooled or you like, that's your trajectory. Like you're on this path.
Right.
And then I was like, no, I kind of want a normal high school experience.
<Right.
laughs> So I switched to cheerleading I became a cheerleader. So I did that all through college, did some competitive cheer. I actually went like pro, semi-pro, not really.
Uh-huh.
But there's, you know how like high school kids, they get sent to cheer camp in the summertime?
Uh-huh.
So I, for the summer after I graduated high school, I was the staff of that camp. So I would like travel around the West Coast of the U.S.
Right.
and teach those camps to high school students. And it was a really cool experience.
I bet. I went to UNC Chapel Hill, and I remember in the summers they would have cheer camps, and I'd walk through campus and be like, oh wow, they've like taken over this whole section of campus.
Yeah. Thousands
yeah.
of cheerleaders.
Yeah, thousands. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually almost did. I almost went to college for cheer.
Right.
Not Cal Poly, but I was thinking about like doing a scholarship somewhere, but I ended up not doing it. But yeah, that was kind of my identity.
Wow. Yeah. And I bet that gymnastics really helped with that too, because cheerleading has become like really gymnastics oriented, right?
Yeah, it definitely it put me at an advantage for sure.
I bet, right? Getting all on top of the pyramid and doing flips and stuff, and right on. So you told us a little bit about the connection with Cal Poly, your dad being an engineer and respecting the engineering school. But tell us a little bit more about that journey and in choosing Cal Poly and how you heard about our major and all that.
Yeah, so it wasn't a very direct story. It kind of weaves about, but pretty much my sister, like I said, she went to UCSB, and I kind of was like, even though I loved UCSB, I visited my sister a lot, I didn't want to be my sister. So I was like, I don't want to go to UCSB. I want to have my own identity. I want to do my own thing. And I just applied to colleges, UC schools, state schools. My neighbor went to Cal Poly, so I knew it was a good school.
Okay.
But I didn't know from the get-go when I sent out my applications what school I thought I wanted to go to at all.
Right.
It wasn't till I visited Cal Poly after I got in, because I did like early acceptance.
Right.
In a few schools. I came back to Cal Poly to see the campus, and that is when like I really fell in love with the town, and not only the town, but everybody I interacted with was very friendly. It was so nice and said hi. They obviously didn't know me. I didn't go there. So,
right.
And that kind of atmosphere and environment wasn't apparent at the other campuses, and I won't name names of other campuses
right.
I went to, but it was just so outwardly friendly.
Yeah.
That's what really drew me to Cal Poly.
Yeah.
But then I actually applied and got in under communications major.
You know, I was thinking you were a major, I thought you had transferred in. So you started as communications, and then how'd you hear about us once you were on campus?
Yeah, so I was in communications, and I didn't really like it. And then I heard it like from a friend of a friend, like, oh, did you know that there's this major called, at the time, RPTA?
Yeah.
Recreation, yeah. Parks, Tourism Administration. And I was like, oh, no, tell me more. And then that person told me about, you know, how it's Parks and Rec, but also event management, and then sports. And obviously, I was really interested in the event management piece.
Yep.
So talked to multiple people and then decided that this would be a better fit for me than comms. So I went about the whole transfer project or process. And then I got in. I think I was only in communications for like one quarter. It was like two. Like I was an early transfer.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think I remember that. So cool. So once you got into the major, what did you go about and how did you form your identity? Did you really dive into the special events stuff, start volunteering a lot? What did you do to really cement yourself in the major and in this area?
Yeah, I think pretty early on, I joined, maybe I was a junior about that point, but I joined RoFi Lambda. Do you guys still have that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was a secretary, and
there
I loved
you,
it, and
there
it was
you.
So much fun. And I think that helped me, like, get acquainted with the faculty, with
right.
you guys, as well as other students. And I was fortunate enough that, you know, some of my friends slash sorority sisters were also in the major, so I had a group of individuals already outside the classroom that we could work on projects together, volunteer together. I remember going to like Growing Grounds. I think that was a class. I had to go to Growing Grounds. And do things like that. So I think that kind of helped me create my identity initially. And then as I got older, between my junior and senior year, I took an internship in the summer. And then, of course, you do your internship in your senior year as well. Yeah. So that's kind of how I evolved within the process.
Awesome. Any big memories that really stick out for you while you're here at Cal Poly your 4 years?
Yeah. I mean, with RPGA specifically, I will always remember Marnie Goldberg's class. It was the programming class where you actually have to plan an event. And we planned a fashion show, and it was for the LGBTQ community, like the center. Yeah. We did like a fashion show awareness. I have like very vivid memories of planning that event. And that was like our first tangible time, like start to finish from conceptual, like from the concept phase all the way to the post phase, like after the event, like everything that goes into planning an event. So I think that was like great hands-on experience for me that I will always remember.
We update the curriculum periodically, and we're in the process of updating the curriculum, and we've talked about some things and how to rearrange some things, and we keep coming back to that. So many of our alumni and interns, and when they reflect back, they talk about that experience in 2010 and how memorable it was. So we're definitely, I mean we're reimagining the class and trying to help, make it more modern, but we're not going to do away with that aspect. I mean, it's so critical, and so special for students. So appreciate that reflection for sure. So tell us a little bit about your internship and, how you found out about that, how you found out about it, how you got it, and then, kind of where you went from there.
So the internship before my senior year or my official like senior internship?
Yeah, your official one.
Yeah. So I found out about it. So I was an intern at the Cal Poly Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, which is through the business school. So I actually worked there part time, and then it turned into my internship full time when I was at that point of my studies. So I heard about it from a sorority sister, actually. She was working there as well, and then she heard of this opening and let me know. But the position was an events intern for the center. And basically what I did was I planned all the student forums and competitions. So it's basically an incubator space for students to develop their business ideas. Right. And in order to share that with investors or the community or faculty and teachers or other students, they needed an event to do that.
Right.
So I think it was in like, is it Spanos Theater? Mm-hmm. Or I think that's what it's called. The one at the Civics Art, the Arts Plaza across from VG's. Does VG's exist anymore?
Yeah, no, that's it. I think it's Spanos Theater.
It's there. Yeah, the theater would be in there. But so I'd plan these forums, and so there'd be catering, there would be a whole logistics side to it, and organizing all the students, and we'd often have a guest panel, and so organizing the logistics of bringing them into town, making sure that they had accommodation if they didn't live in SLO. So that was a great experience, and I got exposed to really cool innovation projects.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sorry I was vague in asking you about your internship. I should have remembered. I was pretty sure you were with CIE, but you had, like you said, you have several internships listed. So I was like, that's why I was vague.
No worries.
I was going to let you tell me which one. You have so many, but I think that's a great example too for current students to realize that, yes, of course you have your official internship, which is, you know, which is usually the very last experience. But, you know, doing other internships along the path obviously is very helpful. Was there ever a time where you thought you were going to be a wedding planner?
Oh my gosh. I have a story for you for that.
Yeah.
I thought I wanted to be a wedding planner. I really did. And then I'm so glad that I had those internships experience the summer before my senior year to really give me an inside scoop of what it would be like.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing against that field. I think it's great. And it takes a special kind of person to really like that kind of work. But I didn't really know what was under the hood until I was in it.
Right.
So that was the beauty of an internship. It wasn't for me, but I had a great time. I was a wedding planning assistant at a venue for a summer.
Mm-hmm.
I have a funny story. It was an outside wedding venue, and I have a memory of there was this beautiful cake, and it was outside. And my boss, she's like, Sarah, you need to go up to the cake in the front. You can't let anybody see you. Take this boutonniere pin and handpick all of the flies that have flown into the cake before we cut it.
Oh, no.
So I have this memory of, like, going behind trees, like tiptoeing behind the gift table and, like, getting behind this cake with a little boutonniere pin and, like, a plate and getting all these flies off of it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but it was fun. I mean, it was fun, but I'm glad I did it because I was like, maybe this isn't my long-term goal.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I think that's very important. And I appreciate that you said nothing against this industry because, but I don't even think you need to worry about that because, you know, I'm a sport management professor. And, and when I teach sport management, that's actually one of the things I say. I go, I tried just about everything in sport management and I didn't really like it. So I became a professor. I decided that was the area in sport management that I liked.
Yeah, so, that's fair.
So, you know, that's the beauty of internships, right? So I want to fast forward. You know, you've been working at Adobe since August of 2015. You started as the I love this title, by the way, Global Wellness Coordinator. That's so awesome. What a great title to start off with. And then and then went into Global Wellbeing Strategist. And as we said, you're now the Experience and Design strategist at The Hive at Adobe. So I'd love for you to talk and reflect here at the very beginning. You know, a lot of people in your generation jump from job to job and from company to company, and you've stuck with Adobe and moved up, and I'd love for you to kind of reflect on that and why you've done that, and yeah, we'll go from there.
Yeah. That's a great point. I'm probably my only friend, maybe one other individual that has stayed at the company that they started with when they graduated, which is crazy. And I can say, just speaking for Adobe overall, that it's clear that they really care about their employees. And the organization that I was in before for the past 4 years, I was in the employee experience organization. So I was closer to the HR side of the house. And I actually became close to the head of HR. Mm-hmm. She's an amazing person, and she's been a role model for me in a lot of ways. And she would always speak in our all hands and really preach that you should be a generalist and not a specialist. And in the one-on-ones that I had with her, I was lucky enough to get some FaceTime with her over the years. She'd always encourage me, after 2 years in your position, like, you should be exploring other things, but within Adobe, like, we want you to test out other things and your skill sets within our four walls.
Mm-hmm.
And we want you to do it. Like, it's very clear here that they encourage internal mobility.
Right.
So it's not like if you voice to your manager, I'm interested in this organization or this position, or maybe you want to take a different direction. Generally speaking, everybody's really supportive. I think I got really lucky with all the managers that I've had, and they've all, you know, wanted me to think long term about what I wanted to do. And in my last role, I was kind of thinking about what other areas of the business I would want, you know, to learn about or be a part of. And I had a series of meetings set up with my manager and the parts of the business I was interested in, and just seeing if I can work with them on a project basis. And so not necessarily seeing a job wreck and jumping ship, but I was able to dip my toes into different areas of the business while staying in my current role. Mm-hmm. And having my manager's blessing, knowing that's okay, it was awesome. And so I feel very fortunate that I found a company that I love the leadership, I love the values. I get a lot out of the company that I'm in. So I think that that's something important for students to realize is companies don't want to lose top talent. They want to help you grow your career. So seek out those companies that care.
That's awesome. I love that. And I love that you were involved in employee experiences. You know, I've talked to you a little bit about the experience industry and where we see that as in terms of an umbrella to really, really ultimately to help describe what we do. You know, when we were recreation parks and tourism, we were leaving out 70 to 75% of our students. And, and so the students really drove us, top students like you really drove us into this direction. And it's been so beneficial to us. And really, one of the things that we see now is that we are, through our industry, we're in the business of co-creation with clients, users, customers, members, fans, volunteers, and the last part of this, employees, right?
Yeah.
And so you were really involved, obviously, in the first part of your career there at Adobe with the employee experience. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how? I know you became really passionate about it. So can you talk a little bit about what you were doing, the types of initiatives that you guys did, and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So before I just made this jump into this more recent role that I'm in now, I was for about 4 years Adobe's global well-being strategist. And basically, I started in that role with the mission to help create a global well-being program and strategy for Adobe. Mm-hmm. So at the time when I started, we didn't really have a strategy around employee health or employee well-being and what we stand for and what our pillars are, what our mission is, what our roadmap is. Nothing of that was on the table when I started. And it takes a village. So I had lots of people helping along the way. But basically, we developed a global strategy and were able to launch it in the entire world, so over 30-plus locations. And so it's everything corporate health. So you can think of, so I oversaw everything well-being that touched the physical office, so all well-being-related events, activities, and initiatives. So that could be anything from national flu shots, to biometric screenings. We have on-site wellness centers, mm-hmm. so like on-site gyms. So I would help in the beginning stages of that. If we were designing one, I would help with that, getting employee input. And then we work with a vendor company that manages those spaces. So I would partner really closely with them, making sure that their initiatives match our larger strategy. Mm-hmm. I help partnerships with our on-site registered dietitian, planning our well-being expo, which is our biggest well-being event every year, also managing well-being related programs. So we have a program with Headspace, which is the meditation application, if you're familiar.
I'm a Headspace user.
Yeah.
I walked in about three miles this morning, and I did 10 minutes on my walk in.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So I help get that program onboarded for Adobe, and then I help manage it afterward. I created the Wellbeing Champion program. So the Wellbeing Champion program was a way for employees to get involved. So we would give them, it's like an employee club per office. So it'd be the Wellbeing Champion Club. And we would give them X amount of dollars per quarter for them to plan a wellbeing related initiative at the site level that related to the strategy. So in our broader strategy, each quarter of the year related to a specific wellbeing theme. So for 3 months of the year, it was all about emotional health. For the next 3 months, it was around physical health. And then it was all about gratitude and joy. And then the start of the year is about starting your year off right, knowing your numbers, preventative health, like going to the doctor, things like that. So I was a part of a lot. I was able to travel. I traveled to India. I traveled to Bucharest and London and Paris. All for my job. So it was a blessing. It was so much fun. I met amazing people, worked with great people, and hopefully impacted a lot of people.
Yeah, so. I am sure you did. You know, when you said 30 different offices worldwide, I almost interjected and said, did you get to go to any of those places? And wow, that's awesome that you got to do that. So let's jump now to your current position. You know, I think I've been saying the Hive, and it doesn't say the Hive. I'm sorry, I've been adding the.
But, it's okay.
Is that okay? What is Hive at Adobe? Tell us what Hive at Adobe is first, and then we'll jump into your position.
Yeah. Okay. So you can think of the Hive as an internal consultancy function at Adobe.
Okay.
So we use a design-led methodology that focuses on collaboration, problem-solving, and innovation in an accelerated time frame. So we do a number of things. So we help teams by designing cross-functional workshops, or right now I'm in the organization of customer experience. Mm-hmm. So we embed in certain projects within our organization of customer experience, and we're the experience strategist in those projects. So we're making sure that we are doing customer-centric solutions, and we're making sure that the experience that we're designing for is meeting what the customer actually needs. So thinking about the customer on like a holistic level. Mm-hmm. So doing all of that work right now. So that's really fun. And also with our design-led methodology, I don't know if you're familiar with design thinking or human-centered design whole concept.
Yeah, since you've left, that's exactly the path we've gone down.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, we're integrating experience design and design thinking into almost everything that we do, and that's why Dr. Hendricks was like, oh my God, you've got to talk to Sarah Torres. She's doing exactly, So we I don't know if you saw it last week. George P. Johnson gave us $500,000 to help start our experience innovation lab, and.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I want to go back to Cal Poly and retake the major.
Well, you are. You're going to come back and you're going to you're going to be involved in projects, and you'll be able to help us from the back end as an alumni.
I love that.
So tell us what your day to day as an experience and design strategist. Some really amazing symbiosis with what we're doing now. And so tell us what your day-to-day is like.
Yeah, so a number of things. Usually we're planning what we call a Hive session, which is our traditional cross collaboration sessions. And we're solving big business challenges. And in order for us to do it, it has to be a very high level challenge. So we usually have like our C-suite level buy-in to this problem. So it's a huge issue for the company. And with those big, big problems, so our end goal is planning like a 30-person in-person session. We have our own special lab, our own room. But in order to get to that point, we have to actually go back 6 to 8 weeks before that session and plan it. And so it's actually a lot of planning. So we like to say that we hold the container of the design. Like we hold the container of the day. Uh-huh. So we've planned sessions with a variety of topics that we might not be experts in. We're not. We're not going to be experts in anything, in everything, because right. This is across all of Adobe. Right. But we have this special methodology that people come to us because they know that we can help them go over these challenges in an accelerated time frame. Right. So we have what we call design meetings. We have about 5 design meetings leading up to the Hive, and we have a special design team. So it's people close to the problem within that team that we work with, and we have a specific approach. So this week we're doing this, this week we're doing this, and we end up with a specific design of the day, outline objectives, outcomes, and outputs. We have inputs. So like we have artifacts that need to come into the Hive. Sometimes we'll do like customer interviews before we get to the Hive, mm-hmm. or we'll have them during the day. But these sessions are very special sessions. They're all in person. No one has laptops out. Everybody's present. The room is non-traditional. There's moving whiteboards. We plot everything on big paper plotters. So it's very tactical, tactile, I should say. So that is, we usually have one of those running. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, some of the projects and customer experience that I'm on is I'm helping design our customer experience AI powered chatbots, which is really cool. Yeah. So I'm being able to interface with AI, which I think is just a way of the future that a lot of technology, like that's going to be a part of everybody's job, and to some degree will be AI. So trying to help create bots that will actually meet the needs of her customers. So like designing bots. Yeah. So that's some of my job right now. And more recently, we are creating a series of journey maps. Mm-hmm. Doing journeys, which is basically we're highlighting areas that customers go through within our ecosystem of support, mm-hmm. and highlighting in order to highlight problem areas or gaps and opportunities so the rest of the organization can solve for it.
Right.
But so it's illuminating the customer journey in an actual map.
Right. I love it. Yeah, for sure. That is really awesome. I would think that your experience in CIE with innovation, and I see where you've stayed involved on the innovation side with mm-hmm. women in innovation. I would think that really helps you in this position, does it?
It definitely does. It definitely does. I feel like a little bit of everything of my past and well of my degree always has blended quite seamlessly into what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I bet. So when you think about let's jump to the student side. When you think about your experience here at Cal Poly, you know, obviously I just told you that we're doing some different things that obviously align with what you're doing now. But if you had any advice for students, what advice would you give to those who are interested in this area and interested in becoming an experienced design strategist?
Well, that's so exciting to hear that you guys are teaching design thinking now, because I was going to say, when I started to get curious on this, I just started taking classes on like IDEO, which is a huge name, huge player in that space.
Yeah.
So I would just say, really, it is, this methodology is hard. It's not a standard approach to solving problems. So.
Right.
It takes practice, and it really is. My manager always says it's like rewiring your brain. Like have to think about it differently, and in order for you to be good at it, you just have to practice it, like with anything. So continue to do that. If you want to look at IDEO or read books, if you're interested in this field particularly, I would look up service design. Mm-hmm. Because that is really kind of what we do as service designer, but it's mm-hmm. but it's interesting in the U.S. They don't really call it service design; it's more like a UK term. But it fits what we do. So there's some good books out there on service design, and I think there any problem that you approach, whether it's in your career later on or in school, you can use this methodology. So I would encourage you to just start doing it now, and also encourage others to start thinking in this way, because I think it's an impactful way of thinking that all industries will start to trend towards. And I think more and more people will be looking for that skill set when they hire. And if you already have it and can show it in a past project, then that's one step closer to getting into a field such as myself.
You know, we're in the process of really trying to integrate it more, like I said, into the curriculum. And in January, we hired one of the world's leading experienced designers, Andrew LaCanienta.
Oh, wow.
Is one of our new faculty members. And he's traveled all over the world, giving keynotes at all kinds of different conferences. And it's really exciting to have him on board. And I'd love to, I need to connect you guys. I think you would love to talk to him. And he's a pretty cool dude. But thank you so much for taking the time. I'm really excited about how much your career is aligning with what we're doing now. And you know, I think what's so exciting is what you just said, that last part of what you just said. You know, whether it be a local park, a bank, a hotel, a hospital, or a corporate event, every organization is looking to integrate experience design to be able to co-create those experiences in a more meaningful and more impactful manner. And so it's really exciting. I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you've got a ton of different things. Like I said at the beginning, now 10 to 15 years when you're that CEO, or, you know, when you're in that C-suite, you know, we can talk again. But thank you so much for taking the time today.
Of course. I loved it. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. See you, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye.